Hello and welcome to the Resilient Pharmacist podcast. So far in the series, we've had a wide range of stories being shared from pharmacists who very generously shared their stories from work and life. And a common recommendation that's been repeated over and over again is the need to stop and cultivate self-awareness, the need to reflect on how things are going. In this episode, we speak to a pharmacist who did just that. So my guest today is Seamus Ruan. I'm Dr. Katrina Bradley, and this is The Resilient Pharmacist. So hello, Seamus. Thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Katrina. How are you? And I'm delighted to join you in the podcast today and looking forward to having a nice chat together.
Thank you. Yeah, me too. So to get us started, would you like to introduce yourself and just tell us a bit about your background and where you work?
Yeah, so Seamus Ruan is my name. I'm from Claremorris in County Mayo, but I'm the last 30 years or so living in Galway. So Galway is very much my adopted county, but I suppose, Katrina, you know how these things work. It's very hard to extract an Irish person from their county of origin.
Isn't it? Yeah, I still say I'm from Kilkenny, although I've been the last 30 years in Dublin.
Yeah. So that means for me as a Mayo man, I suppose at this time of year, that's the only concern really I have in my head is how I'm going to manage to get tickets to go to an All-Ireland final that hopefully we won't lose again.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you'll find them.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're from Mayo, but living in Galway, and you're working in pharmacy there. So do you want to tell us a bit about your pharmacy journey?
Yeah, so I graduated from Trinity in 1990. And after that, I came to Galway. So in 1990-91, I completed my pre-registration in Lohan's Pharmacy, which is in Prospect Hill, which, if you know, Galway is just off your square in Galway. And Lohan's, I suppose, calls a pharmacy in a way is a bit of an understatement, or it's a bit inaccurate because it's an institution in Galway, you know, it's a second generation pharmacy. And even to call it a pharmacy, I suppose, is a bit inaccurate too, because it was more of a chemist shop, you know, a traditional chemist shop. So I can remember back doing my pre-registration year there, you know, writing prescription details into a big dusty prescription book and making up lots of extemporaneous preparations. And it was very much based on, you know, good old fashioned values. Yeah. So my tutor there then was a guy called David Lohan, who very sadly passed away suddenly last year, but he taught me an awful lot about pharmacy. And I suppose going back over the years, there's been a big connection with me and that pharmacy. My sister had done her pre-reg there a couple of years before me, and a few years after I finished my pre-reg there, I went back to do a locum for Davis and ended up meeting the pre-reg who was doing her pre-registration year that year, and she ended up becoming my wife, Kathy. So that's where we met. So we've a long history with Lohan's.
So it has a dear place in your heart, Lohan's.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Very good. So, and where did you go from there?
Yeah, so after that, I suppose, you know, my career followed what was fairly typical trajectory for a pharmacist at that time, which was, you know, I got a job in a new opening in Galway, a small chain in Galway called Matt O'Flaherty's, and they were opening up a new store in Ayr Square. So I can remember packing the shelves on that, you know, prior to opening. And I spent a couple of years at that pharmacy. Then I moved to a different branch of the same chain out in the Galway Shopping Centre. And then after a few years, I was looking for a change and I decided I'd do a few locums. So I did the locums mainly in Galway City, in Galway County. And that included a few maternity leave stints in some of the hospitals in Galway. So I spent a good bit of time in University College Hospital. I worked in what was then Galvia Hospital and is now the Bon Secours. And that was lovely to get, you know, exposure to what pharmacy was like, your hospital pharmacy was like, and how it differed from community pharmacy. And, you know, I suppose I always did know really that it would be community pharmacy that I'd end up in. That aspect of dealing with the public very much appeals to me.
Yeah, but great to have had both experiences, really, hospital and community. That's interesting.
Yeah, and I always find that that's hospital experience has stood to me and has benefited me certainly in my career in the community. But I always had it in the back of my head that I'd like to own and run my own pharmacy. So I was constantly on the lookout for opportunities to do so. And in 1997, a pharmacy came up for sale in Galway City, which is then called Burke's Pharmacy. It was in a suburb of Galway called Merview. And we were lucky enough to successfully buy that pharmacy. That was the same year I got engaged to Kathy. And we spent the next few years there I suppose, getting to know the business, getting familiar with how to run a pharmacy, becoming familiar with the customers and looking after their wants and needs. And I suppose putting, you know, the way you put your own individual stamp on things. So.
Yeah. So a very busy time in your life between getting engaged, presumably married, new business. You must have been busy.
A busy time, mm-hmm. Katrina's right, was apparently not busy enough for me. So,
you got a bit bored.
Yeah, so I suppose I did get a bit restless, I suppose, you know. So I was on the lookout for more opportunities. And then an opportunity of a greenfield site came up in a suburb of Galway, which is called Johishka. Mm-hmm. And Johishka is always a bit of a mouthful, I think. It's Irish for either black water or Johishka, or a drink of water. Oh, yeah. And so, you know, I've spent many years since been on the phone, the people asking me, what's the address of the pharmacy? I'd say Johishka. And they'd say, would you spell that for me?
Yeah.
So I spent my time since spelling Johishka. Mm-hmm. And as a result, we didn't call the pharmacy Johishka Pharmacy. We called it Merlin Pharmacy because right. There's beautiful woods, Merlin Woods, just behind the pharmacy. Mm-hmm. And so at that stage, then Cathy spent most of her time in Merlin Pharmacy. I spent most of my time in Merview Pharmacy. And, you know, Merlin was in Johishka, as I say, was a new upcoming suburb in Galway that unfortunately hadn't been built yet. So the pharmacy was sitting in the middle of a building site for, you know, a couple of years. Yeah. Difficult going at the beginning. I can remember the road being closed, we'll say, to traffic coming from the west for about 6 months. And then eventually when the road opened, we thought, now we can begin trading normally. And then they closed the road to traffic coming the east way. So it was very much in the middle of a building site and it was difficult initially.
Yeah.
But eventually things improved and, you know, the pharmacy became well established.
And you got restless again.
Well, you would think that would be good enough, Katrina, for most people. But roll on another few years and, you know, I came across an opportunity to open up a pharmacy in partnership with a friend of mine who also then became my business partner. And that was in Tuam County, Galway. Mm-hmm. So we opened up Medwell Pharmacy. And I suppose it's important to mention in the background of all of this, like you have alluded to earlier, Katrina, you know, the not insignificant things of like getting married, having three beautiful kids, buying our first house, moving to a new house. You know, that particular time of your life,
yeah.
I suppose, when things are very, very busy and things are very hectic.
Yeah. And the kids start doing hobbies and you're ferrying and taxiing as well as working and keeping all the balls in the air.
Yeah, absolutely. And we would often say at that time, I can remember saying, you know, two parents is hardly enough, that sometimes you'd actually need three parents to bring them here, there and everywhere, you know.
Yeah.
And so to put everything into context in there, to give a background to all of this or what happened next, I suppose it's important to say that I always had an interest in, you know, the areas of self-help or self-development or what we call popular psychology, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of area of fitness, health, mindset. And, you know, I often think that if you stand at the door of Easton's, for example, or stand at the door of a bookshop and you just observe people as they go in, you'll find they'll always gravitate towards one particular area in the bookshop. So some people will head straight for the business section every time. Other people will head for the sporting section. But for me, it was always that particular area of self-help or self-development that always kind of attracted me. So if I was ever in town with Cathy and I'd say, I'm going for Easton's, she'd never have to go looking all over the place in Easton's for me. She knew exactly where to find me. Yeah. So that was always just the area I gravitated towards since I was a teenager, really, I think.
Yeah.
So that kind of leads me on to then, for some reason, at this stage in my life, I just did stop and paused and just reflected on the situation that we were in or that I was in. And, you know, just taking stock of where I was headed and what direction my life was taking. And
so at that point, it would be very easy to say, well, actually, you know, I've done what everybody would expect. I've got the pharmacies, I've got the family, I've got the home, I've got the wife, I've got the children. You're in a pretty good spot.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, life, I suppose, is all about moving and progressing and, you know, things changing all the time. So there would have been, I suppose, a tendency to think that, you know, I have three pharmacies now. The next natural progression is, you know, maybe you buy another small chain of pharmacies. So you end up with six and then it could be nine and then it could be 12. But for some reason at this stage of my life, my career, I just paused and reflected on all of that and decided that really wasn't for me. It just wasn't what I wanted, because I always did know and it was always clear to me that, you know, really and truly, I was a family man at heart. I really love going down the burn for a run or going for a swim. Or even in a pharmacy situation, you know, what I always enjoyed in the pharmacy was going out to the counter, chatting to customers, chatting to patients, relating to them and to their families and getting to know them and whatever their issues were and see what way I could go towards solving them. Mm-hmm. But the reality of my life at that stage was this, you know, I spent an awful lot of time in the car. I was driving from one pharmacy to another. I had my head stuck in roses and organizing days off and holidays and invoices and suppliers and stock control. When I actually stopped to think about this, you know, I was actually quite, and maybe even unknown to myself, I was actually quite stressed and anxious and maybe worried. And there genuinely were not enough hours in the day for me to complete all the tasks that I was supposed to complete. And then by the time I got home to my family, you know, I was too tired to engage with them. I was not able to show up as the father I wanted to be to my kids, the husband I wanted to be to my wife. And that was a real interesting and a aha moment for me, because, you know, up to that point, I'd always assumed, and I feel a lot of people maybe do assume, that the way the world works or the narrative that we've been given from a very, very early age, from, you know, when we go to school, is that, you know, this idea of work hard at school so that you can get on well at your exams, mm-hmm. and get on well at your exams so you can either go to college or get a good job, and work hard at that job so you can get promoted, or in my case, it was so in my own business. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you'd have the nice house and the car and a couple of holidays abroad every year. And then you'd have medicine, and then you'd be successful. And when you're successful, then you're going to be happy.
Yeah.
So that's the journey I think that a lot of people take on, because that's the narrative that's really set up for us. And, you know, so it's all eventually about achieving the success. And then when you're successful, you'll be happy. And ultimately, I suppose we all want to be happy. So I'm sure, Katrina, you yourself want to be happy. Anyone that's listened to the podcast, ultimately, we want to be happy.
Yeah.
And I find that term happiness, or the word happiness, is often kind of maybe misused or abused, because we know happiness is just like an emotion, and emotions are fleeting, and we know it's not practical or even desirable for us to be happy all the time. And so really, when we say we want to be happy, I think what we mean is that we want to experience high levels of well-being. And this is the topic then that I really love, this whole area of well-being. And well-being, then sometimes people can think it's a bit fluffy or a bit airy-fairy or a bit kind of hippy-dippy. Mm-hmm. But really, when you define well-being as just the ability to feel good and function effectively, which is a lovely definition that I came across with. And essentially, you know, every single one of us, it's innate in us as humans. We all want to feel good and we all want to function effectively.
I love that reflection that happiness is emotion which is fleeting, and no more than sadness isn't the reality as such. And that idea of well-being, about feeling good and functioning effectively, seems more grounded, actually, than this idea of happiness. It's maybe trying to get more contentment or settled, seems to be where we're trying to aim for, with that idea of well-being and feeling good, irrespective of what's going on in terms of the sad times and the happy times. Is that how you see it?
That's it, exactly. Yeah, because, you know, happiness, no more than any other emotion, like, emotions are just signals, and they're signals that once we become aware of them are just giving us messages of what's happening internally for us or what's happening in our environment. Mm. And it's not practical for us, or it's not even desirable for us to be happy all the time, because it's important that we do feel worried or we feel anxious or we feel stressed. So the emotions themselves, there's no emotion that's problematic. I'd always say it's the length of time that you spend in an emotion that becomes problematic. So there's nothing wrong with being sad, because it's perfectly normal and acceptable to be sad. But if sadness is prolonged and it happens, you know, over a period of months or weeks or months or years, then, you know, we can call that depression, and then it becomes problematic. Mm-hmm. So emotions, really, if we can just see them as signals, and if we take heed of the signals, and then we have to be agile about our emotions as well and be able to shift them and to move them on. So, you know, if I'm not feeling great, is there anything I can actually do about this? Would things like going out for a run help me shift my emotion? Would ringing a friend help me shift my emotion? So I think it's all based really on having an awareness of how it is we're feeling We've been able to check in with ourselves physically.
And can I ask you then, sorry to interrupt, but you know, you're saying that emotions are signals. Do you think you were having signals being sent to you, you know, during all those busy times, and you were just too busy to either tap into them or recognize them? Or were you always attuned to those signals?
No, I think, you know, really, I suppose what happens a lot of us is that, you know, we are given this narrative by society, really, that, you know, if we do something now, we get the benefits of it in the future. Mm. Of course, that's true, but the focus can't always be on the future. It's really important that we focus on, you know, how we're feeling now. Yes, I suppose really what I'm trying to say is this, you know, oftentimes we just head up on this, or we jump up on this treadmill of life. So we get up in the morning and we go off to work and we come home and we do the same thing we did yesterday and the day before. And we're just really on a treadmill. So it's kind of like nearly a social hypnosis, that we're all just hypnotized into thinking, well, this is the way the world works. I just have to do these things and this is what's expected of me.
Mm. And there's lots of things tied up with that, aren't there? So, you know, I know we've talked before about there's the identity and the legacy and the ego and, you know, it's and the narrative from society. It's a lot of things. It's quite complex, isn't it?
It is, really, yeah. And I think it's instilled into us in a very early age, you know, that to achieve happiness or well-being, what I prefer to call well-being, you know, we have to look to the external. So we have to have something, or we have to be someone, or we have to do something outside of ourselves to achieve that. But when we actually stop and pause and examine, for, you know, we all are aware of, we'll say, Hollywood stars or sporting heroes or entrepreneurs that are insanely successful. And we think that these are all the things that they have, all the things that we feel we should have or that we want. And that when you examine their lives, we see that lots of them are suffering from drug addictions or serial broken relationships or from anxiety or depression. And so, you know, I wouldn't in any way compare myself to any of those. Mm. But the similarity that I would see is that, you know, I had at this stage achieved what I thought I wanted in my life and what society would, I believe, have encouraged me to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of this leading me towards the promised land or towards this sense of happiness or well-being, it actually brought me further away from it.
Okay.
And so I could reason then that if three pharmacies didn't really make me happy, that it was very unlikely that six pharmacies would, or nine pharmacies, or 12 pharmacies would.
Okay.
And, you know, this didn't hit me, I suppose, because, you know, it didn't hit me like a bolt out of the blue. So it wasn't like one of those moments that you see in a movie when suddenly everything changes and the clouds open and the sun shines down. It was nothing like that.
Yeah.
It was a kind of a gradual thing, I suppose. You know, over the years, I'd studied things like stress management and clinical hypnosis and yoga teacher training. And a subject that tied it all together for me was applied positive psychology.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a phrase that I was always kind of aware of. Is, you know, we're always hear this idea, you know, that knowledge is power. And I always thought that that was really untrue, because the way I see it is knowledge is just interesting, you know, because haven't we all read the books and done the courses and downloaded the apps and watch the movies.
And listen to the podcast.
And then proceeded, yeah, listen to the podcast. Absolutely. You're so right. And then proceeded to do absolutely nothing with any of that information. So knowledge really is just interesting. It only becomes powerful when you decide you're going to use it or decide you're going to apply it in your life. So there's no, absolutely no power in knowing that exercise is good for you. It doesn't make a pin of difference to your life unless you're prepared to actually go out and do some exercise. And so it's the same with meditation. We all know it's good for us. But unless you do it, it's not going to benefit you. And it's the same with diet. And so at this stage, I decided, you know, with the three pharmacies, I decided I was going to actually do something about it rather than being aware of all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so over the next couple of years, I decided to, you know, rebalance my life. And over a period of time, I sold off two of the pharmacies. And now we've one pharmacy remaining, Maryland Pharmacy. And, you know, with the rebalance of that, you know, that pharmacy is open 9 to 6 Monday to Saturday. And I've no doubt that if it was open 9 to 9 Monday to Saturday, and we're also open Sundays and we're also open bank holidays, there'd be more money in my bank account. But I also do know, and maybe I have a luxury in doing this because, you know, we have sufficient, but I also know that if there was that extra couple of thousand in my bank account, it wouldn't actually make any difference to my sense of well-being or my sense of happiness.
Mm-hmm.
But by having my hours 9 to 6 Monday to Saturday, it means I have a balance in my life. It means I can spend time with my family. I can, you know, work on my relationships. I can take the exercise. I can relax. I can rejuvenate. And so you know, initially selling those pharmacies, I found it a difficult thing to do. I mean, there was plenty of nights that myself and Kathy spent talking about it and wondering, was it the right thing or the wrong thing, or should we or shouldn't we? Because really it was kind of going against that general narrative that we have in society, mm-hmm. that we need to be bigger and better and faster and we need more and more. And the pharmacies were part of my identity.
Yeah.
You know, I would see them as part of like a legacy. My ego was definitely involved. We all want to be thought good of and admired. And I was the guy who owned a few pharmacies.
Yeah.
But I knew that what was more important to me wasn't necessarily what other people thought. So it wouldn't be very sad if I held on to them pharmacies just because I thought it would create a good impression to others. You know, it's far more important to me what I think of myself.
Yeah.
And so that's definitely informed the decision to we'll say, downsize.
So how did you feel with your peers, and what sort of reactions did you get? Were people surprised, or did they generally understand what you were doing? You're saying that, were there people saying, you imagine the people were saying, your man, what's he at? But ultimately, you were guided by what you wanted to do, it sounds like.
I was, yeah. And I did certainly for a while, I did feel a little bit uncomfortable about it in a way. And I would have asked myself the questions like, well, look, I'd see guys maybe who are in my class or people I went to school with, and they seem to be, you know, expanding their businesses. And I've been involved in a lot of, groups where there'd be like peer support, or people who own businesses would get together and talk about things like, you know, how their turnover had increased so much mm-hmm. this year compared to last year, and how now they used to employ 50 people and now they're employing 150 and their margin had improved. And I used to think, geez, what's wrong with me? Like, how come I can't do any of that? But I actually knew with my core that it actually didn't really interest me all that much. And it didn't really do it for me. And yeah. I'm not knocking anyone by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not knocking anyone who is interested in that kind of world.
But I think what you're saying is you just need to stop and see, do things align with your own values.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I know, I'm sure he won't mind me saying it, Deck, who is involved in one of our other podcasts, had said when he heard your story, he was like, I really want to know, how did he know to stop? Because Deck was saying, after, you know, really hitting hard times, he realized, okay, he was forced to stop, but he admired the fact that you were able to choose to stop. And I suppose what leads to that sort of decision to choose? You said it's not a great epiphany. It's a growing awareness and just being mindful of how you are going through today to day. Is that how it was for you?
Yeah, it definitely wasn't like one bolt out of the blue. I suppose it was like an evolving situation, but I would put it all down to just having a level of awareness. Mm-hmm. And as I said before, you know, I do think that really and truly, oftentimes, you know, from an early enough age, we hop onto this treadmill of life and we just, you know, get up in the morning, we go about our business, and we rarely just stop and pause and think and reflect on, you know, what actually is it all about and what is important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just having that ability to be aware of how you're feeling, what your values are, what's important to you in your life.
Mm-hmm. And recognizing that they shift over time as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And recognizing then that maybe just being aware of them isn't enough, but that we do have to take action.
And I think that's the beauty of this conversation. It's actually reminding us that, yeah, it is great to stop and be aware, but then the action is required and you need to be proactive about achieving what it is you're trying to attain.
Yeah. And, you know, I think if we were to stop and pause for a while and think about things and really just, you know, stop and consider your life, you know, that there actually, when you do think about it, there is nothing that's more important than your well-being, you know, your ability to feel good and to function effectively.
Yeah.
So irrespective of what money you have or what achievement you've got or what recognition you think you have in the world, unless you actually have the ability to enjoy this, mm-hmm. you know, it's not really worth anything to you.
And I love the way you've talked about interweaving this with goal setting. So we've been taught, you know, from an early age in college in business and everything, to have SMART goals, that they'd be specific and measurable and realistic and time bound and actionable. You have another aspect to that, though, as well.
Yeah, well, I often think when it comes to our well-being, that people assume that, you know, well, I could never do that. People assume that to make changes to their well-being or to boost their well-being, that they've to make absolutely monumental changes in their lives. Mm-hmm. And they think, oh, that just wouldn't be possible for me. But we do actually know that, you know, the consistent application of small daily habits in your life, many of which only take a couple of minutes a day, can be hugely powerful. And so there's this concept of the power of 1% gains. So that if we shift things or we change things just by a small amount every day, but if we're consistent about it and if we do them on a daily basis, that's similar to, you know, things like compound interest or to achieving exponential growth. So, you know, initially when we make small changes, you think, oh, sure, that couldn't work. That's too small. That's too simple. And I often get that. You know, I talk to people about, I talk to individuals and companies and organizations about well-being. And sometimes people do say to me, that sounds too simple, Seamus. How could that possibly have any effect? You know, you're telling me that if I can stop for a few minutes and think of a couple of things to be grateful for, and that's going to take me 90 seconds a day, how could that possibly have an effect? And or I tell people, go down the road and run down the road for 5 minutes and run back up for another 5 minutes. I say, sure, how could that possibly transform things? And they're right. You know, when you do that once, it's not going to make any change, or it's not going to have any effect. But when you do it over a period of maybe weeks or months or years, then, you know, it has monumental effect. And I hope you can picture that kind of a graph, you know, the exponential graph. Mm-hmm. So at the very beginning of the graph, you know, if you, the lines appear parallel. So whether you make no change, it's a straight line going across, small little changes, positive changes, you know, you have that exponential curve. Or, you know, if you make decisions that are detrimental to your well-being, the curve goes the other way. Mm-hmm. So your destination ends up being completely different based on very, very small but consistent habits. So that's the power of 1% gains. I think that's really, really powerful.
It is. It's a really powerful concept, and it makes it more achievable, doesn't it? Back to the objectives then of what you're trying to achieve, what you've very nicely said to me before is incorporating into the goal about the state we're in. So we're great at kind of setting goals, but not necessarily incorporating ourselves. Can you say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so I think that's really powerful as well, Katrina. So the whole idea of goal setting, you know, as you mentioned, maybe SMART goals, and we're all told that it's a good idea, you know, to visualize what it is that we want in the future, and then to write down maybe the steps that we need to take to achieve that, and then to go and take action and to, you know, work on each of those individual steps. But oftentimes I feel that, you know, we can approach goals with a sense of maybe urgency, or we can get frustrated that we haven't achieved them, or we're not going making progress towards achieving them. And we can approach them with a sense of lack. And so we're stressed and we're anxious and we're worried about our goals. And I always think that if we take a step back from that goal setting and instead focus on, well, what state am I in at the moment, and what would be a preferable state for me to be in before I go about taking any action? So if you imagine, Katrina, that there's two versions of you, so the stressed, anxious and worried Katrina, and if you try and take steps to achieve your goals from that place of being, you know, from being stressed and anxious and worried, so you're going to take action or make decisions from that kind of a state, wouldn't it make far more sense that before you take any action, if you could change your state? So can you become the calm, peaceful, relaxed Katrina? And, you know, it's like two different versions of you that's showing up, so for your goals and showing up for your life. And so the calm, peaceful, relaxed version of you, you know, there's a different part of your mind is active. There's a different part of your nervous system firing, the different chemicals circulating throughout your body. And so you're going to make, it's literally like a different person. You're going to make completely different decisions. You're going to take completely different actions if you're coming from a sense of calm, a sense of peace and a sense of ease compared to being stressed, anxious and worried. So I think if we can approach our goals and approach our life, you know, from that place, and, you know, let your ultimate goal be, well, then can I maintain a sense of calm, a sense of peace, even a sense of fun or a sense of laughter or a sense of enjoyment? So can I maintain that throughout my day and throughout my life and see, you know, does that bring me to a different destination compared to, you know, approaching things from stress, anxiety and worry?
And I love that you've introduce that concept of where you're at and what state you're in, Seamus, because, you know, in 20, 30 years of experience, I've seen so many people talking about goal setting, be it personally, but also in business, also in education, in careers. And I've never had the conversation with somebody about, well, where is your state at? Where are you now? It might be what is the current situation objectively in respect of their goal, but it is a miss. And I like the holistic approach of introducing how somebody is as they're thinking about the goals that they're facing and where they need to be before they can embark on that journey. So it's almost a step before where everybody starts off from.
Yeah, and I think that all starts off then for me, it starts off by having a sense of awareness, yeah, and awareness of our body and awareness of our mind and our thoughts and our emotions. And the way we cultivate that awareness for me is by, you know, mindfulness or by meditation.
Okay.
And sometimes people think that meditation is just clearing your mind of all thoughts, uh-huh, which it isn't really. It's just becoming aware of the present moment. So it could be becoming aware of your body or one of your senses, or becoming aware of your thoughts and not getting carried away by them. And what that allows us to do, so sometimes people think that's all airy fairy and hippy dippy as well, but what that allows you to do then is become aware of what was the emotion you're feeling in the present moment. So it's a busy evening, a busy Friday evening in the pharmacy, and it's really, really busy, and so you just are stressed and you assume you're stressed and you mightn't even know you're stressed.
Mm-hmm.
But what awareness allows you to do, or that awareness allows you to do, is to open up a gap between the stressor and your response to it. And so, for example, the stressor is the busy pharmacy. And just because it's busy then, if we're not aware, we just become, you know, our response to that is we become anxious and we become worried and we become excited.
Get carried with
things.
The energy of it, yeah.
Get carried away with it. But when you can open up a gap between the stressor and the response, it means that your pharmacy can be busy, but you can pause and stop and think, well, it's busy at the moment, but I can just take my time. I don't have to get stressed because it's busy. It's the same with you're caught in traffic. Just because the traffic is really, really heavy doesn't mean you have to get anxious or worried about it. So when we're aware, we can kind of open up this gap between the stress and the response, and we can get to choose our own response. So then you could stop and say, well, maybe, you know, it would do no harm if I introduced, we're busy in the pharmacy this evening, maybe I'll introduce a bit of laughter into the pharmacy. Maybe that would benefit me and it would benefit my team. So maybe we'll crack a joke,
yeah,
or we'll have a bit of fun, or we'll approach things differently.
So what you're really saying there is, you know, you're giving that space for the emotion. Excuse me. You're giving it the space for the emotion, which is essentially your signals, and listening to the signals, being aware of them and being able to identify them before then deciding on the course of action as a result of those.
Yes. Yeah, so we get to identify them. And then if we become skilled at it, then we can get to shift them or get to change them,
yeah,
or we can even get to choose them. So sometimes, you know, we can be busy just staying in the pharmacy for Friday evening and we get stressed, and that stress could last for the rest of Friday and half day Saturday as well because we're not aware of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But if we cultivate that awareness, you know, we can, if necessary, we can shift them on.
And it's so interesting because that has been the consistent theme throughout all the podcasts, the stopping, becoming aware, and not getting carried on the flow of what people think is expected, maybe, is such an important part. So the million-dollar question then I will finish on, Seamus, is, did you find your sense of, and I'm not going to say happiness, sense of well-being, did selling the pharmacies, did doing all of the kind of restructuring in your life and all the thinking that you'd done with Cathy, have you achieved it now, do you think?
So I would definitely think that selling the pharmacies was the best thing I've done. It was a hugely significant step in my life. But I don't think this kind of sense of happiness is something that you necessarily achieve and it's a done deal. It's something that takes constant and consistent work.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard it described well once as, you know, there's only three positions that you can be in life. One is that you can be on the wagon. So on the wagon might mean that you're exercising consistently, that you're looking after your diet, that you're doing a bit of meditation, you know, and that things are going well. So you're on the wagon. Second position can be that you're falling off the wagon. And so, Jesus, your diet has, you know, kind of gone by the wayside a bit, and you're not really bothering going out to exercise. And, you know, you're not looking after your health or your well-being the way you should.
Mm-hmm.
And the third position you can be in then is you're getting back on the wagon. And so you say you've spent a couple of weeks or a couple of months, you say, God, I haven't really been exercising consistently recently. I think it's time for me to start again because I know it's going to benefit me and I know it's good for me. And I'm going to look after my diet as well. And I'm going to you know, do a bit of meditation or whatever. So those are the three positions. You can either be on the wagon, you can either just fall off the wagon, or you can be getting back onto the wagon. But the really important thing to realize is to know that there's a wagon. That some people don't even realize that there's a wagon there. And they just, as I say, up on this treadmill of life, they're going about their daily business and they'll do the same thing tomorrow and the same thing the next day. So I think it's just having this awareness that there are things that we can do and there are steps that we can take. That's which we'll call jumping up on the wagon or being on the wagon, that do have a profound influence over a period of time on the level of happiness and the level of well-being that we do experience. And I don't think that it's like a destination. I don't think it's something that you achieve and then you can forget about it. So the work is the work, and the work always has to be done. And that means that I would hate for you to think that I'm down here in some little bubble in Galway and that I have it all sorted and solved. You know, I'll probably, this evening when the kids come home from school, I'll probably be shouting at them. And, you know, I'm sure I'll be getting stressed myself in the pharmacy. But it is having that kind of awareness. So it's just constantly doing the work. So making sure that you do get out and get a bit of exercise. Moving your body is so important. It changes your physiology, it changes your body chemistry, it changes your emotions. Looking after your diet, you literally are what you eat. Like that food that you digest and is digested in your stomach becomes your cells and actually becomes part of you. So it's really, really important we eat well. And meditation is like a massage for your brain. It can change the structure of your brain. It dampens down your amygdala, you know, that fear-based system in your body. And so it's not as if these things are ever done or ever completed. So they just become part of your life. They become a way of life for you. And I think when you do them consistently over time, the benefits are just enormous.
Fantastic. So the message I'm getting is, yes, you are achieving well-being, but it's an ongoing process and the work is always there. And whether you sell pharmacies, buy pharmacies, work in hospital community, whatever listeners are have as their experience, it's understanding their state of well-being and constantly and consistently maintaining that through a whole range of steps, not just one eureka moment.
Now, that's very well summarized what I was trying to say in a very long-winded way.
Okay, so that's essentially your message, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for sharing it with us. And I think what has really struck me in our conversation is the simplicity and the quietness of it, but the power and the strength of it. And I really appreciate you sharing your experience. And I think there's lots of rich learnings there for everybody. So thank you for your time, Seamus.
Thank you, Katrina. And just finally, I think it's funny that you do mention simplicity because, you know, I always think there's no marks for making things complicated.
Yeah.
You know, the simpler things can be, the better, because simple just means, you know, that it's easy to apply to our life or that we can apply to our life. And sometimes people are looking for this big secret or this, you know, big revelation that they're going to have. But, you know, I think the secret is that there isn't a secret. And, you know, it's just all about, as you said, just simple little steps that anyone can incorporate their into their lives.
That's a lovely way to end. The secret is that there isn't any secret. And it is just kind of that consistent application. Well done. Thank you very much for sharing those thoughts with us. I hope it's been helpful for people who've been listening. And thank you very much for sharing your story. Thank you for listening to The Resilient Pharmacist. If you like what you hear, please subscribe wherever you listened to this episode. And for more information, you can follow us on Twitter @BrazilianPharm.